Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Morelia Python Radio, brought to you by Morelia Python Forums, www.moreliapythons.com. What's up, Owen? How you doing?
We're doing all right over here, hanging out, and time to talk Morelia.
That's right.
Like How's every the... other Tuesday for the rest of our lives, because we lie to you people online.
That did not go well.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we would have did it a different way or thought it out.
I know, and we thought we were so damn clever this morning because I'm at work and I'm like, Eric, we should tell people it's the last episode. You're like, yes. And, of course, on the same thread and messages, Zach Baez, who's like, what? I'm like, shut up, Zach. So, you know, then we put it out there, and, of course, immediately people start liking it. I'm like, yeah, they know it's bullshit. So, yep.
Yeah,
yep, that did not go far. I wouldn't know what to have a life? No. No.
Yeah, right. Come on.
I wouldn't know what to do. Yeah.
Snake readers can't do that. So how's the rough scale doing?
Both of them. Oh, my God. I remember how we asked Jason Balin if there was one animal in his collection that he, like, sneaks down in the middle of the night and checks on?
Yes.
And he said, like, it was the albino? I find myself, like, checking on this thing, on these two, constantly. They both ate for me, and one shed. And, you know, I've never had so much fun with a snake shed in my life. Going, oh my God, it's bumpy. I mean, you know, and it's this little gauntlet in my snake rack where it's my my chondro and then the two rough scales in the tubs right next to each other. And I find myself going to these three tubs like all the time now, and it's terrible, but. I love it. I love it so much. And then the same day, the chondro shed, one of the rough scale shed, and all three of them ate, and it was like, oh, it was great. I'm totally happy with these guys. So.
Oh, man. So does this mean a Site C is coming on board, and you're going to let somebody mess around with all the other stuff?
Yeah, I'll just send all the carpets to Chris, and then I'll just have, you know, my chondro and my rough scales, and I'll be happy. So.
Oh, wow. Oh,
no,
he's
no.
getting...
No, that is not happening. So, no, the issue is, the problem is that, you know, Chris and I were talking yesterday about, you know, where he's at, where I'm going to be at when it comes to living, and it's like, so where are the whalers going? Oh, yeah, we should figure something out with those.
Yeah,
and there's like this long pause, and it's like, I guess you'll take them? Yeah, I don't know. So It's one of those, all of a sudden we realize that there's a lot of animals here.
I'm at that same crossroads, and I was talking to you earlier, and it was, you know, with so much still to do with carpet pythons for me, you know, it's like, what do you cut? What do you keep? What do you, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like,
right.
Oh, well,
it's hard, especially with animals that you've raised from babies. I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to let go of a project like that, or even like even a different species. Like, you know, it's hard to let go of some of the offshoot species because then you might want them back later on, and then it's going to be more difficult because you never. And I tell this to people who are always talking about getting out. I'm like, listen, you need to understand one thing. You're never going to get the collection back that you had when you leave. You know,
yes.
You might get some of the animals back, but it's never going to be as far as you are or as extensive as you are or the potential thereof. So just be ready. Be prepared for that. If you're prepared for that, that's on you.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you kind of look at some of the things that, you know, do I keep this? Do I get rid of that? You know, as far as, like, we were talking about scrubs and, you know, keeping... I would never get rid of the Halmahares, never get rid of the Moluccans, just because I guess when it comes to scrubs... when it comes to scrubs, that's what gets me going. So, you know,
yeah.
I don't know.
You go kick your dog. I'll distract the people. All right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So
no one listen to the yelping. Okay, it's okay. It happened.
Yeah. So as far as you know, Carpet Fest, what's going on with that? We got the booster up and running.
Up and running.
And I don't know how many shirts we sold so far, but
two. We sold two shirts, one to me and one to you. Yes, this was a wonderful idea. So, you know, it's the booster is up, and it is for just raising a little bit more money for Rico and US Arc to be on top of what we raise at the auction at Carpet Fest. Now, the Carpet Fest t-shirts are a Carpet Fest exclusive. We're sorry. You actually have to get off your ass and come to Carpet Fest if you want a t-shirt. So that's where it goes. If you're going to come to Carpet Fest, order your t-shirt online. It will be delivered to Carpet Fest. Do not be the only idiot there without one. Or otherwise, Eric and I are going to be the only idiots with ones. And I do not want to match him, so I don't know. It'll be awkward. Please don't make that happen. So go to the booster, order your shirt, and we'll bring it to Carpet Fest. It's a really cool design that Zach drew up, and we're hopefully going to have a shirt for Carpet Fest every year. This way, when we're old, we can lay them all out and feel accomplished. So
we can collect them like carpet pythons? Or...
Exactly! Oh, my God! We'll have a Jaguar one that doesn't work unless it's inside out. Yeah.
Yeah, so for everybody that doesn't know, the Northeast Carpet Fest is May 17th. It's in Waldorf, Maryland, hosted by Howard Redding of Redding Reptile Breeders. For news and updates, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Carpet Fest. And the website, for some reason, wasn't working the other day. I guess it's still waiting for the domain to be approved, or I don't know how that works, but it's at www.carpethomestead.car. Oh, shoot. Let me look this up real quick.
Oh, my God.
It's,
can't we just say that you're going to post a link and just leave it at that?
It's, carpetfest.homestead.com. That's what it is.
That's weird.
Yeah, I know. It's supposed to be carpetfest.org. Anyway, did you see, tonight we have Chris Salemi, just so, you know, I got that right there.
You did get it right. Oh, my gosh.
We're going to be talking to him about what he has going on and... yeah, we probably talk, I don't know, maybe every day, every other day. He's on one of those Facebook message groups things that, you know, he usually cues me into what's going on if I miss stuff or, you know, I'm at work or being able to pay attention. But anyway, did you see the Kay brothers? You remember those guys?
I do.
On the show a while back, Troy. And anyway, they posted up what they thought was an anorthristic carpet. Did you see that?
No.
You didn't see that. So
why do I suck so much? I don't know.
Do you ever look at the Morelia Python Radio Facebook page? I mean,
Of course I do. I'm on there all the time. I just don't pay attention. I mean,
oh, okay. Anyway,
yeah, come on. Jesus.
So I'm looking at it, right? And aneurystic, and basically that means that it lacks red pigment, right? So I started thinking about what that would entail or what that would imply as far as, like, if you're crossing, you know, morphs and such and all that. So what's weird, and we're kind of like in between the boa world and the ball python world. But anyway, a snow in the boa world is an aneury, which is aneurystic, and an albino, which I think that's the same in corn snakes too, right? So why does it change in python? I mean,
we've thought about how many different ways are there to get to different morphs. I mean, we could breed the aneury to the albino and still get something that looks like a snow, and now we have two different ways to get to snow. So, you know, breeding them together, what does that do? I don't know. It could come out purple. I don't know. I've never done it before. So this is the uncharted territory where we kind of veer off from stuff that's so that we know to so that we might not.
Right. So I started thinking about, like, in boas they have a moon glow.
Mm-hmm.
So a moon glow is basically a hypo, aneury, and albino. So if you had a hypo, an exanic, and an albino, so basically it's a snow, and I guess, you know, they add in that extra gene, and all of a sudden it becomes, the hypo makes it a moon glow. I don't know, you know, but there's some cool stuff that's going on down there. I'd be interested to see how it turns out. And then, you know, the Atlantic jungle. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
So I saw that one.
Okay. All right. So you're paying attention. I like it.
I am. I'm still paying attention. Where are we? So
how's your season shaping up?
No comment. I mean, we got the one clutch on the ground, and then I'm thinking we're looking at possibly four more maybes. I mean, I got some females that are looking pretty plump and doing all the normal stuff, which is waiting for sheds and for time, and that's out of carpets, and then I'm looking at possibly I keep catching the brettles locked, so that's a good sign. But as far as other things, like the maclots and the white lips, we're probably not going to get any of this year. Just because I think the maclot female is too young and the white lips are just weird. So we'll see with them. As far as we do have a Malukan clutch. Or sorry, we do have a Malukan. Whoa, sorry. Malukan pairing. There's no Malukan clutch. Whoa. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. Chris just got called by 28 people, okay? So there we do have our Malukans are together, and we haven't seen anything from them, but they didn't hurt each other, so it's a plus, and they're kind of just hanging out, so who knows. And then the Savus are another big maybe, but we're not even expecting them till around September.
Okay. I was just asking you before the show if you've ever seen a female not have a prelay shed. And
I have.
I think my caramel head albino girl, she's not going to have a prelay shed. Because have you noticed, and this is just a question, do you notice that your girls, maybe like the day before they're going to lay, they start laying in like awkward positions and they look like so you have
either they're basking belly up or they're laying in awkward positions. Like right now, my red tiger downstairs is got her front end coiled like a condor, like she was sitting on a branch, and she's sitting on herself, but the back end where all the eggs are, she has kicked out away from her body. And it's almost like she doesn't want to touch it. So having a snake coil the front half and then just kind of leave the back half away kind of just is like, okay, so you don't want to touch it because it's uncomfortable. All right. So And she'll be due probably in the next week or two, which is great because, you know, I'm leaving for Ohio on Monday, and that is when everything will happen. Why? Because I'm not here. That's how it goes.
No.
The second I leave is when, like, you know, Andrew's going to call me or Chris is going to call me and be like, dude, there's like 8 clutches here. And I'm going to be like, what the fuck? So, you know.
That's lovely.
Yeah, this is how it goes.
Yeah, so, I haven't seen a pre-lay from her, and I think she's going to lay any day now. And, you know, the zebrahead albino, she's in shed, so.
Okay.
You know, she should be gone. Well, but what is cool and kind of surprised me is that my citrus tiger girl, I bred with an albino, and I didn't think that she was going to go. And I opened it at the cage up today, and sure enough, man, she is solid as a rock. So I don't know if she's ovulated or she looks like she's going into a shed. So, you know, hopefully I get more than one egg this year from her. Yeah, that was kind of a bummer.
Well, don't worry. I have plenty of room in my incubator.
No, don't worry.
Yeah, plenty of room in the incubator. I hope you know, if you have to bring 2 clutches to me this year, you'll never hear the end of it. So,
no. I don't
care. I'll call you at midnight.
Yeah, I don't care if I have to sit on the eggs myself.
Not happening.
I'll get my dog to incubate the eggs. For a couple of months. So, all right, enough of us babbling. Let's get...
That's enough of us talking. Yeah. No one wants to hear us anyway. So...
Yeah, I know. All right, welcome, Chris. Welcome to Morelia Python Radio. Glad to have you, and let's get it going.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing all right? Chris, why don't we just start with the normal stuff, and how did you get started in reptiles?
Well, unlike everybody else, I wasn't into reptiles when I was younger. I grew up in New York City, so I wasn't hiking in the woods, and I wasn't out looking for reptiles. I didn't get exposed to reptiles until I started working at the zoo in 1996. And then I wasn't huge into reptiles. I, believe it or not, I didn't really want to touch them. I was more of a mammal person back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had uromastics there and plated lizards, gopher snakes, rat snakes, but I wasn't really into any of that. And then I started hanging out with, Greg Heim, who keeps the diamonds that you see on Morelia. Me and him worked together at the zoo for a while. And he would spend a ton of time on kingsnake.com. And that's, I started talking to him about, you know, the whole world of reptiles, you know, for sale on the internet, reptile expos. And, that's when I first started getting into it. I went to my first reptile expo in maybe 2000. And I picked up, my first reptile was a uromastix, which I still have.
Cool.
And, that was my first shot at keeping reptiles.
Okay. And then what brought you towards more Morelia?
I wanted something different. I had kept the uromastix. I had leopard geckos. I had dart frogs. I had uroplatis. But I didn't start getting into the snakes until I moved and had the room to keep them. And I saw Anthony Caponetto's website in 2009. And that's when I really started looking into keeping carpets. I remember seeing bright yellow jags, and that really caught my eye. And I started just researching carpets. I read his care sheet, and I believe it was Will Bird's care sheet on his website.
Yeah.
And I went to a reptile expo in 2010 and picked up my first pair of IJs.
Huh. Awesome.
And even then, it was more of just keeping two snakes, two carpets.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really think about breeding, you know, until maybe, you know, 2 years later when, or a year later when I figured, oh, I'll give it a shot. You know, I got a male and a female, and I'll see what happens.
Yeah, why not shoot at it and see how it goes? Were you successful your first year?
Yes, the first year I got a clutch of 12 eggs, and one died as soon as it came out of the egg. There was fully formed snakes in the eggs. They didn't pip on their own. I cut those eggs, but they were dead inside the eggs. And then the other nine did great. And
awesome.
I still have one. I kept one and, you know, gave some away and sold a few.
Cool. So can you tell us about your job? You work at the Bronx Zoo, correct?
I do.
Okay. Well, tell us, like, what is your position and what do you do on a day-to-day at the Bronx Zoo?
I'm a wild animal keeper there. I spent about 8 years working with primates.
Mm-hmm.
Along with in the primate buildings, we also have reptiles. So I got a lot of exposure with reptiles in those buildings. Our jungle building had a lot of Asian reptiles. And then our gorilla building had a lot of African reptiles. Had ball pythons, African rock python, Nile monitor.
Okay.
Python. So I'd worked with them. Then about 2 years ago, I transferred to our carnivore area. And right now I work with snow leopards, Amur tigers, Amur leopards, grizzly bears, polar bears, and lions.
So it's big and can kill you. Got it. Okay. So, Jesus. I mean, you know, I've seen grizzly bears. It's like a furry bus. I mean, you got to be kidding me. God.
Wow.
Right, I do work with a former coworker of yours, so I'm going to have to maybe get some good stories about you that I could share.
Aaron has nothing. Nothing.
Oh, okay.
Aaron has nothing. You can go ahead and you can question her. She's got nothing. Amy's the one you want to talk to, but Aaron can get you to Amy, so I don't know why I'm telling you this. Anyway, so, yeah. But you do, and... you know, you sent me, I think I made a comment on one of the shows that one of my professors made in college about how no matter what, if you're going to work with big cats, you don't ever get to play with them or touch them. And then that night you sent me a picture of, like, you cuddling with a snow leopard. And you're like, well, you kind of do. And I'm like, God damn it. So, well, that was a nice way to throw that back in my face.
Yeah, I had to.
Of course. I would, too. So that is very cool, and I know that there are several million people that wish they had your job. Is it just feed and care and maintenance, or do you help train and enrichment and all that other fun stuff too?
We do a ton of enrichment, do a lot of training. I do a lot of training with the tigers. That's one of the animals I train the most.
That's cool. That is so cool. So, also, and I mean, you know, it's the Bronx Zoo, so, you know, it's not a crappy roadside zoo at that. So.
No, it's one of the bigger zoos in the country.
Mm-hmm. I've never been there, but I do want to go. So.
Yeah, that would be a cool trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, come down. Or come up.
Come up, sideways. Hey, where it is. All you, Eric, you are looking at your sheet.
Oh, no, I thought...
No, covered. See, I got this fun sheet now, and it's got pictures on it, too, now, and you totally won't even stick to it. I mean, Jesus. And now we're doing it on air. Yes, you weren't paying attention. You were probably playing with the dog. So the whole... whole interview is debunked now. Look where we are now.
Oh, no.
I have the outline in front of me if you need me to ask the question.
Yeah.
I like to mix it up. God,
Eric. Let's start. Yeah, I see you did. That's what screwed me up, Owen. See, I'm used to cued into the thing. I'm like, well,
and you weren't paying attention.
Well, somebody's got to man this show. What the heck? can't do everything. Anyway, I wanted to talk about how you keep carpets because, you know, way back when we had the show with talking about keeping that constant temperature and whatnot, you know, you were telling me that you keep your stuff hot. And I thought it...
I don't keep it hot all the time. They have access to higher temperatures.
Right.
I'm lucky enough where I could get the temperatures hot during the day, but I can easily drop the temperatures at night.
Okay.
The room
cools
down pretty good at night.
So, break us down for us. How you're keeping your carpets?
So I have all my adults in cages. My cages are all 3 foot by 2 foot by 18 inches tall. I heat the bottom row with Pro Products heat panels, which do a good job of heating the cages above them also. And I could usually get the hot spot about, 90, 92 degrees. And the ambient temperature in those cages is, mid to low 80s. And then at night, I have everything on, I use Bavarian Electronics thermostats, and I'll drop the temperatures based on the light cycle. So, when the sun starts going down here, my thermostat usually clicks off to the nighttime temp, and I'll drop the hot spot down to low 80s and get the ambient temperature into the 70s. In the summer, when it gets really hot,
right,
sometimes I won't even use the heat because it gets really hot in my room. There are times I'll put the air conditioner on in that room just to cool it off a little bit.
Okay.
But most of the times in the summer, like July and August when it's hottest, especially when we have those really bad heat waves, I won't even use the heat.
Ah, okay. Well, that's cool. It saves on the electric bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, in the winter, I definitely make up for it, though, because that room gets really cold in the winter.
Okay. So you don't use, you don't have, any ambient heat going on. You're just using radiant heat panels that are in the cage.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So how do you like the radiant heat panels? Are you a fan of them?
Oh, yeah, I think they're great. I've had them in those cages since I got, probably 3 years, 4 years since I got those cages.
Right.
And they work great. I think Owen uses them also.
Yes,
yep.
I do.
Right?
Yes. Yes, I absolutely love them. So.
Yeah, I just put a picture up of your setup that you sent earlier, your bank of cages that you have going on.
Mm.
And it's pretty cool. So you're using what, a 3x2 or is it a 4x2?
The cages?
The
top row is 3 foot by 2 foot by 18 inches high.
Okay.
And the bottom row is 3 foot by 2 foot. They may even be a little deeper than 2 feet by maybe 15 inches high. They're a little bit smaller. They're the same ones that Owen has, Evolution Reptiles, I believe, made them.
Yes.
The bottom
one? Yes, I do. Yep.
Okay, cool. So do you guys think, 18 inches, do you think that's too much? Do you think that's enough? Did you make it that way purposely because that's how the cages come, or what's your thoughts?
I really like those cages. Those cages are made by Reptile Basics. They don't make them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If they still made them, I would have a room full of them. I really like the 18-inch height, and my carpets use every inch of that 18-inch.
Okay. I can't see in the picture, but do you have... Oh, yeah, you do, because you sent me pictures where your IJs are perching and stuff, right? So you have perches and stuff in there?
Yeah, I pulled a lot of the perching out when I had the breeding going on, because I was using those cages.
Okay.
And it just became too much of a hassle if I wanted to pull animals out or to get... I put a nest box in once breeding starts.
Okay.
So it was just... There wasn't enough room for me to, easily get in there to pull them out. But now that I got the eggs from those females, I'm going to re-perch everything.
Okay. What about feeding? Because a lot of times, like if you're able to get, or your animals are able to access those higher temperatures, you can feed larger meals. Do you do that?
No, I don't feed huge meals, just because I don't always have, you know, the larger rodents.
Right.
I usually feed medium rats to my adult females, and
okay.
I'll feed them maybe every 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
In total, I think I fed, I looked earlier, I think I fed my adult females between 8 to 10 times this year, and that was it.
Okay.
Wow.
And they put my female, the female that laid 13 eggs for me last season, I only fed her, I think it was 9 times, and not only did she regain all the weight that she had lost, but she put on an additional, I think it was 700 or 800 grand.
Wow.
So what do you think is causing that if you're only feeding 9 times a year? Is it?
Well, that I can't really, I don't have the numbers to give a definite answer. Just
okay.
Because it's just that the last 2 years I've only bred one female.
Okay.
So it could just be her.
Right.
This year I'll be able to tell if it has anything to do with higher temperatures or feeding less meals, just because I'll have different females. I have different females that laid eggs for me this year.
Right.
So I'll see how they put the weight back on. But I feed all my females the same. They all get fed the same day.
Okay.
So they're all getting that, you know, 8, 9, or 10 rats a season.
Cool.
Now, do you up the frequency, say, closer to breeding season, and then are you feeding through breeding season?
I don't feed through breeding season, and I don't really feed on a schedule, so
okay.
I kind of feed when, you know, when I have time or when I remember to pull rats out of the freezer. So, but it's usually every 3 weeks. But no, I don't feed heavy towards the end of, you know, the summer, or, you know, I don't have a set schedule. I just feed.
Okay. Now, do you change it up for your males? Do you doing something different for your males?
Yeah, I don't feed my males very often at all.
Okay.
All my breeder males are pretty small. My granite male that bred 2 females this year, he only weighs 600 grams.
Wow.
And my IJ male that had sired the first clutch that I ever got, he was only about 600 grams also.
Okay.
The only large male I have is the one, is that Hannibal GQ.
Right.
Male. And the only reason he's that big was because I bought him that big.
Right.
Okay.
What about as far as the ones you're raising up? Do you approach a different schedule with those? Feeding schedule?
I usually feed my hatchlings. I'll feed once a week.
Okay.
The whole back, I am feeding a little bit more. But
okay.
I wouldn't say that I'm feeding it, you know, a lot more often than the other ones.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, you have a certain snake in your collection that gets, you know, like, you know, that extra. If there's only one mouse left, it's like, oop, this one gets it. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I like him better than the rest of you.
I definitely don't feed heavy.
Right.
You know,
I definitely
feed lighter.
Yeah, if you're feeding nine rats a year to your females, that's pretty... That's pretty light, but hey, man, you're getting a result, so that's what, you know, and that's what's cool. You know, I like people that do things a little different and are able to get results, because just like Owen says, there's always 99 ways to skin a cat, and I guess that applies to breeding snakes as well. So, so with breeding, What's your thoughts on your breeding? How do you approach that? You know, like are you cooling down? You know, when are you cooling down? How long? Et cetera, et cetera.
My last meal is usually fed to my adults the end of September.
Wow.
My room gets cool at night. I kind of go along with what the room is doing, and that is just—I just have the room that I keep all my animals in. It's on the top floor. It has 8 windows in it, and it just the temperature drops at night quick. So I know that come September and October, the temperature in that room is going to be dropping. So I work with that rather than trying to, you know, raise the temperatures when I could just work along with the temperatures that I'm getting naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, my last meal, I checked, my last meal was September 30th of this past year. And then I'll go a month keeping my temperatures, my hot spots the same for that next month. And then November 1st, I readjust my thermostats. So I'll have my night temperatures, my night drop starts at 5 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll lower the temperatures a little bit. So instead of having my hot spot set to 90 degrees, I'll have my hot spot set to, you know, 82, 83 degrees.
Okay.
But I'll do it gradually. I won't drop that 10 degrees in one shot.
Okay.
You know, I'll do a couple degrees 1 week and then a couple degrees the next week.
Okay. And then, go ahead.
And then I introduce my animals right away. Right, once that month has gone by and I start dropping temperatures, I just throw the males in with the females. Even if I don't see anything, I just put them in there and I wait.
And do you see locks right away, or are you? What are you waiting? You're just waiting to bring the temperature back up. I see locks right away.
I don't see locks right away. Maybe my first locks come in December.
Okay.
December and January. So I probably could get away with feeding a couple more meals, or not dropping temperatures as soon as I do. But I just go with the temperature of the room, like I said. You know, by December and January, that room's the ambient temperature in that room at night is getting down into the low 60s.
I think the one of the important things that people need to pay attention to is your room. And I think that if you are constantly, or not, I mean, if you've done it a couple times, you can really dial in your room. And it seems like, I don't know for you guys, but it's almost like it's on a cycle, and it already knows what the cycle is without you really doing anything. Do you guys have do you have the same observations?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I don't. My animals are all on a pretty set schedule. The breed of females that I have, I mean, it was like clockwork with everything she did from when she started breeding to ovulation to laying eggs. Everything was, I look back in the records and everything was pretty much the same. Maybe it was actually a little bit earlier this year than it was last year, but it wasn't a big difference. And my males will eat throughout the year if I offer them food, but I just don't.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. So are you rotating males at all? Are you doing males to do a couple females?
The only male that I rotated was that Granite.
Okay.
And he sired, I have both clutches that he sired in the incubator right now.
Cool.
Cool.
Very cool. Speaking of the Granite.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, no, the only reason that I didn't rotate other males is because I just don't have a lot of females. I have more males than I planned on just because that G2 Hannibal snake grew hemipenes after a year.
Oh, damn it.
The fun of that. Yeah, that's always good times.
Ain't that always the way?
Yeah, and then what happens is you start to question the sex of every other snake you have.
Everything, yeah. Yep.
I was bringing, my IJ Jag and my head albino. I brought them in, and I made one of the vets at the zoo sex them, and then I had a friend of mine who breeds ball python sex them, and then I had another coworker of mine sex them. because then you start becoming paranoid.
Yep.
Or at least I did.
Then everything is in question. Even when you sexed yourself when they hatched. Yep. Yep.
I remember there was, I don't know how many shows, this was probably last year sometime, but Owen was saying he was messing around and we were talking about that and he's like, what would you do if you're like, you know, like that zebra rhino project turned out to be a boy or it was supposed to be a girl? And I'm like, what? Shut up. Oh, man.
Why would you say that to me? Yeah, it was, yeah. No,
why
I'm
would
sorry.
You put that, you dirty,
I don't know.
Dirty man? Yep. Why would you put that thought in my
bad,
head?
Bad juju out there, yep.
So, okay. Real quick, I'm just curious, as far as records, what do you keep as far as records? You know, I mean, we never really talk about people keeping records, and I'm just curious, are you a guy that, do you copy everything down, or are you just jotting some notes down, index card, computer program?
I have.
What do you do?
I do use PerpaPro, not as often as I'd like. I fall behind using it. It's easier for me to just write everything down and then enter it all at once when I get a chance. But I do keep feed records for everybody, shed records, and the occasional weight. And weights, I don't do it. The only time I take weights now is with my females. I'll just out of curiosity, I weigh them before they start breeding. And then I'll weigh them after they breed, after they lay their eggs. But that's more out of curiosity, just to see how much weight they put on by the end of the season.
Right. Interesting. So
I don't keep records of the moon or the tides or anything like that. Like you do.
Some people. Like some people here.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a little crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I got an app for it, and it just kind of puts it there. So
my God.
And, you know, it makes it super simple.
I do notice everything, every big event that I have with my snakes, whether it's shedding or laying eggs or breeding, always revolves around the rain or the snow.
Agreed.
You know, that I've definitely noticed.
Yep.
And, I had my head albino pair, the only time they would breed was when there was a storm. So I guess thank God that we had the winter that we did, because that was the only time that was the only time my male was interested in breeding her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that is true. As soon as that pressure drops, man, it's game on. You know, that should be that would be my biggest tip. If you know that there's a storm coming and you're breeding snakes, put that
open
male
the windows.
That female.
Yeah.
Yeah. You definitely see some action. All right, so, you know, are you doing anything special as far as, you know, incubation or anything like that? Anything, any tips or tricks that you do to get the eggs to hatch?
With incubation, I use these containers from the container store. They have a rubber gasket around the top, and they clip shut. I put a couple handfuls of perlite in there, and then some water. I do it by feel and by sight. I don't weigh it out or measure it out. And I put the light diffuser over it,
right?
And just put my eggs on top. I do poke holes in my incubation boxes.
Okay.
I have one really tiny hole on each side of the incubation boxes. This year, I've covered up the holes because I have a fan running in my incubator.
Okay.
And I noticed that the humidity wasn't as high as in the years past. Everything changed. My whole incubation method has changed since putting the fan in, from temperatures that I keep my incubator at to humidity levels.
Okay. How come? Why?
The air is just circulating now. It's not stagnant.
Oh, mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that you have to raise it up, or?
I actually had to. I raised the temperature of my thermostat 1 degree, and I'm still not getting the same temperatures that I was incubating at. I used to incubate at a semi-thermostat to 89. The temperature in the boxes would read 87. This year, I'm running my incubator at 90 degrees, but the thermometers in the egg box themselves, it's reading something like 86.5.
Okay.
But I prefer the lower temperatures over the higher ones.
Sure. I would agree. So with your fan, is it constantly running? Are you constantly running the fan?
Yeah, constantly runs. It has 10 settings on it, I think. Either 5 or 10 settings on it. It's one of those incubator fans from Reptile Basics. It's a new product they put out.
Right.
And you could adjust it. You could adjust the speed on it. I think it's 10 settings. And I have it set up really low. I think it's only one or two. But I definitely get more air circulation inside and a more constant temperature throughout the incubator.
Which is what you want.
Yes.
Which is good. So are you putting, is the fan positioned at the bottom or the top of the incubator?
It's at the top, and it's pointing at the heat tape.
Okay. How about you, Owen? Yours runs, Owen's is a little different.
Mine
runs off of.
Good.
No, go ahead.
No, so I want to see if you got it right. Anyway,
yours runs off the thermostat. So when the thermostat kicked on, so does the fan.
Yes. So the fan is only on for the moment that it takes to warm up from 1 degree down to the 87 that I set it at. So, and the fan is the fan that came with the freezer to the fridge, so it's installed pointing down, and it turns on, it spins for a while, and then it turns off, which actually was a good thing because when Eric's zebra jags escaped from my incubator box, they went up into the fan, and they would have gotten their little heads lopped off if it was constantly going. So
it was like an Indiana Jones thing.
Yes, it would have been horrible.
The fan was off.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man. Oh. Okay. Yeah, I saw that, I was looking all over the place for a fan for my incubator, and then I just went and ordered a 15-inch
computer
fan type of thing that I'm just going to put where the old fan was, because I have like a Pepsi fridge that I transformed into an incubator. But after I went and bought it, then you sent me the link to that thing, and I was like, God damn it, because I figured why didn't they make this thing, you know? But that was really cool that they have that product, you know. So. Cool stuff. So you would recommend that fan?
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's small. It doesn't make a lot of noise.
Right.
It comes with all the hardware if you want to screw it into the top of the incubator. It's got, like I said, multiple settings. I'm using a small mini fridge for an incubator.
Yep.
So I don't have to run it too high to get the air to completely circulate. You know, you could probably use it in a larger incubator, you would just have to set it to, 10 or whatever the maximum speed is to get that air really moving.
Get it going, okay. All right. So with the, what are you saying, like 55 days for your babies to pip out?
Yeah, the last two clutches that I hatched, I want to say it was 56 or 57 days they hatched out.
Okay. Awesome. Are you a cutter or... Do you let them just go out naturally?
No, I let them come out on their own. I don't like cutting the eggs.
Okay.
I cut two eggs my first year, but that's just because, maybe 2 days had gone by that they didn't come out and everybody else did. So I cut those,
right.
And those were the ones that the two fully formed hatchlings were dead in the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I often wonder whether or not you should cut, not cut. I usually wait till the one pips, and then I'll cut the rest. I heard before that, I heard this with Burmese pythons, that the egg tooth breaks off, and they can't get out, and they drown in the egg. I don't know if that's like a old wives' tale, or, if that really happens a lot, but I don't know. I like to be safe and sorry, but, you know. So, all right, let's talk about some of your carpets in your collection. You know, one that stands out to me, and I've said this before, with I know with Jason Balin's Red Tigers, you could probably attest to this, Owen. You know that peppering that they get down the back?
Yeah.
The one Jag you have, Head Albino, it's like has that all over. I've never seen one like that. Is that, do you think that's something that's genetic, or did you pick that out specifically for that, or is that something that grew into
it? No, when I got the pictures of what Jag albinos were available, I got two photos, two different snakes, male and a female, and both of them looked like that. And then I saw babies from that same clutch that someone else had, and they looked the same as well. But I had asked, was it Justin Julander, I think, when I first got that animal, I had asked him if that was a trait you see with animals crossed with Darwins, or if Darwins themselves had, you know, the peppering like that on them. And he said that he's seen some that do and some that don't. I think it's just a variation.
Okay. It's a wild-looking snake, that's for sure. So you're breeding that one this year?
Yeah, she actually had her prelay shed today.
Nice.
She still looks... To me, she looks smaller than the other females that I have after her prelay shed. So I'm kind of nervous, thinking that maybe she's not going to lay, but we'll see in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. And then I wanted to get your thoughts on Hannibal, the Hannibal look in IJs. Do you think that's something that's genetic?
I don't know. I've never seen anybody post other snakes from that clutch, I probably just missed it. I'm sure other people have them. But I did read on Anthony Caponetto's website, he has a section on Hannibal, and he said that he bred, you know, het to het, you know, in quotation marks, het to het, to see if anything would come of it. And he said it was a really small clutch, and there was nothing from that clutch that looked like Hannibal. And then from another clutch, he had one snake that did look similar to Hannibal, but she died pretty early on.
Mm.
Wow.
And then
yeah,
he didn't breed any carpets last year, so I don't know if he's breeding them again this year, if he's breeding anything from Hannibal this year.
Yeah, I think he's probably out of carpets.
I think he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's got his geckos, and those are burning like freaking the surface of the sun. So you can't really blame him to be like, you know what? I'm pretty sure I can get rid of these carpet cages and put more gecko racks. So, you know, can't really blame him if this was working for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, you know, to each his own, you know. But,
Yeah,
you know, he was like... I don't know, man. When I first got into carpets, I guess I'm like you, Chris. It was like, you know, I went and saw Bullwinkle, and it was like, oh, my God. You know, that just is the wildest-looking carpet python. And I don't know. I was trying to learn about carpet pythons, and there's so many different, you know, this is a jungle, this is a coastal. It's a second nature now, but back then it was like, what the hell are they even talking about, you know? And I don't know, his sight was just like, I don't know, it really pushed me over the edge, like the way he did it. Like I try to gear my sight around the same type of vibe that he had, you know. Try is the key word.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like it was his website kind of seemed like it was a step above. It was like going from somebody's website where it was just like a picture of a carpet python. It's like, this is what I'm producing. And then you go to his site that looks almost like Amazon, you know, shopping. It's kind of ridiculous. So
yeah, it's crazy.
I think websites was his thing. So
yeah,
he did that for a living here. Some of that, yeah. So that helps.
So what other clutches or pairings do you have going on this year? I know we talked about the albino one.
Yeah, this year I have Jag Head Albino to Head Albino. I have Granite to Possible Head Granite. And I have an Anthony Caponetto, you know, the IJ Jag to Granite. So right now incubating, I have Granite to Possible Head Granite and Granite to IJ Jag.
Cool.
Those are the incubators. Yeah.
Very cool. So, you know, with the Granite and the Granite project, what are you trying to do with that? Are you trying to, I think of Viking Reptilia and what he did with the Granite. It's the same, similar route, or?
I really like Granite Jags. That's one of my favorite more.
Yes.
And, yeah, they're badass.
And the those SOB Jags are really bright yellow, and I want to get a Granite Jag that hold that yellow.
Gotcha. Very cool. That's definitely a cool project. So what about your, you know, and I was looking at your holdback from your IJ clutch, and, you know, I was curious, what tips do you look for? Could you give to people, what are you looking for when you're picking out a holdback or just picking out a carpet in general? I know it varies from project to project, and you know, but let's just talk about IJs. Like, what are you looking for in a holdback for an IJ?
I remember when I was hatching out my first clutch, that all I could think of was, how am I going to be able to tell what's good and what's not? Because
right.
They, you know, they're so dull and red, and you know, I didn't want to sell an animal or give an animal away and then a year later kick myself in the ass for getting rid of that animal. But after that first clutch hatched out, I could just tell right away which animal I wanted. It was just so obvious to me. I really liked the bold black outline around the pattern on the IJs. And then I also
okay.
like animals that come out with a stripe down their back with
yeah.
with that, they're almost like squares or diamonds on this side. It's kind of like, I really like your striped jungle. That's
right.
the best pattern to me. That's my favorite pattern.
Gotcha. Yeah, that is cool, no doubt.
So that's what I kept back with my IJs. And, you know, I remember when Matt was here, Matt Lacoste, he was at my house picking up some animals. And the animals that he wanted and saw and got really excited about were animals that, to me, I just didn't see, you know, I wouldn't hold them back, but he saw something in them that he loved.
Right.
So everybody sees something different in, you know, whether it be pattern or color.
Sure, I guess it just depends on what your project that you're going after, you know. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I always look for... I've always had luck when I look for an animal that's usually lighter than the rest. Like, it has like a hypo-ish type look to it, and it's not really hypo, but I don't know how to explain it. But when you look at the clutch, there's the one that has a different like color. Like, it's not as, you know, with my whole back from my IJ clutch, it was that, you know, and man, I thought I picked the right one. You know, and Zach, it was funny. He was picking out this other one, and he was, like, really going towards this one because this is what he really dug. And that one turned out awesome, but it wasn't what I was going after. So, you know, that
right.
just goes to show you, you know.
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, usually what I do is when they hatch, I look for something that's different. You know, when you have all the babies, we've all seen those pictures of people that take pictures of their clutches when they're all in one box or something like that.
Yeah.
You take the picture and you just see something, and there's always that one that is either a different color or lighter or less pattern than everybody else. And that's usually the one I have, like, my main focus. And you usually get, in my opinion, you usually get a boy and a girl like that in a clutch. And those are usually my holdbacks. so far it's proven to yield some of the best snakes in the collection. So.
Cool. I think it's real important. Like, I can't wait for the day when I'm actually working with the snakes that I made. You know what I mean? I'm sure that makes such a difference in your breeding projects and stuff, you know?
It's so freaky. Talon sucked this year, and then I used Echo, who is Talon's son, and Talon, I think, got two females. So it's hilarious because of the fact that, you know, I raised Talon from a hatchling, and then I hatched Echo. So it's cool. It's really cool when it happens.
Yeah, I guess they're, like, tuned into your room and what's really going on, and, you know, so they kind of, like, are used to that environment, you know, which is awesome. I don't know. I look forward to that day. So, what other animals are, you know, your IJ Jag that you're just talking about, that's definitely a cool-looking animal, and if you're shooting for granite jags with that, look out. It's going to be badass. So obviously you don't really care about mixing it up, huh?
No, I don't. In the end, it's like everyone says, that snakes are keeping in a box, or, you know, they're not going back to the wild. They're, you know, it's your animals. You can do whatever you want with them.
Right.
But I also have pure stuff, too. I have the IJs.
Okay.
And I have the pure IJs, and then, you know, I have a caramel, but I don't know what I'm going to do with him yet. You know, I don't have, he's not up to size yet anyway. I have another year and a half before I got to decide. I have a couple head granites. I have that Derek Roddy New Guinea animal, and I don't know what I'm going to do with her. You know, I only have one from that line. I want to breed it to something else. I don't want to, you know, there's only so many times you can keep breeding that animal to animals in the same line. I want to do something different.
Right.
I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do.
You know, that line I've noticed is very stripy. I was thinking about taking it to, like, some kind of tiger type of thing, like, see what happens.
It's also very random when it hatches out. Nothing ever seems to look the same.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I have four animals, and none of them look alike at all. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you studied the difference? Have you looked at the difference in head structure between those and your IJs?
She's still small. That's a 2012 animal, so
okay.
I haven't stuffed her full of food, so she's smaller, but the head to me seems much more narrow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a different head, for sure.
And
so,
who knows what they are, you know? And I've heard a few different things. I don't care. The cool ones is
me. Yeah. They're like, to me, they're like one of those snakes that, you know, I think it's weird that, like, if you put a name on them, I think people would be like, oh, my God, they're the coolest things ever. But, you know, they're such cool-looking carpets, and then you don't have a name on them. But to me, there would be, like, the perfect thing, like, if you're at a show and you're selling, like, a $100 carpet python. You know what I mean? Like, something like in that area type of thing based on how it looks. But they really do look cool, you know. But I don't know. So are you what's your thoughts on I know this isn't in the thing, but are you a lineage type guy, or you don't really give two craps about that, you know? You just
I have some of it. Like, I have the lineage information on the IJ Jag, that Caponetto IJ Jag that I have. And
right.
The only reason I have that lineage is because somebody else did it for their snake. So
okay.
I just saved the photo, and it was already done for me. I have, you know, I know the background on some animals, like my caramel that I got from Matt. He told me who the parents were and who their parents were, but I haven't printed out the lineage charts and gone to PowerPoint, or, you know, I don't know. Not taking it to that level. No,
cool.
I think I'm just lazy when it comes to that stuff.
Got
like I said, I have it, but only because someone else did it for, you know, someone else had already done it. I have the lineage stuff on the Derek Roddy animal, but that one was very easy. They all come from the same two animals.
Right.
And then I want to say it was ended up being, was it the female, the original female died, so then the male was put with one of the offspring, and then they all come down from that, you know, those animals. So there's not a ton of animals to keep records of.
Right.
And
yeah, I mean, go ahead.
In the end, like, you're always taking somebody else's word for it. Not to knock all the work that people put in to make is making the lineage charts, but in the end, it's not that hard for someone to pull a couple of pictures off the internet and say, this is the lineage for my animal. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Not that people are doing that. Like, some of the guys that I know of that are really into it, I'm not saying they're doing that, but others can do it. You know, people who just want to make it up. If you ask them for lineage information, yeah, I have it, and here it is. Meanwhile, none of it's true. And then you end up passing that information off to everybody else. So it's just like the whole purity debate. In the end, you're taking the word of, you know, of someone else.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you're going way back, I can see what you're saying with that. But, like, to me, I think to me the most important two would be the actual parents and maybe grandparents. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, like, to know that is, then I would be happy. You know, and it's not like I wouldn't buy an animal that doesn't have lineage, but, you know, I think it just, I don't know. I think about it as far as with me personally, like, I'm going to be mixing stuff up, and, like, I think it just puts it out there that it just makes it easier for me personally to say that this is what this is, and this is just a coastal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I guess if you, you know, I don't know. I just, like, I don't know if people even care about it, but I care about it because I like to see where the animals, how they've progressed, and I think it gives you a clear insight into breeding and where to take the project and what you see and how far it's come, you know. So I don't know, but again, to each his own, you know. I don't think that I don't think that people should not buy carpets because they don't have lineage, but you know, I think that carpets, you know, I wish that more people would just do, even if it was just the parents, like, you know what I mean? Just, like, these are the parents, this is the story with them, here you go, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few animals that I've never seen pictures of the parents, I don't care, you know, I didn't even ask.
Right.
To me, it was, or, you know, I was at the expo, and I saw a cool-looking carpet on the table, and, you know, I picked it up. I don't need to see all that. If I like the way the animal looks, I'm going to buy it.
Right. Which, in the end, I guess that's really what it's all about, you know. And I think that sometimes we get so caught up in, like, just like the New Guinea ones, like we were just talking about, the Derek Roddy New Guinea ones, you know. People would look at them and probably say, wow, that's a wicked carpet, if there was a name put on it. Like, if we said Cape York carpet pythons, people would be all over it, you know?
Uh-huh.
But you don't put a name on it. They're like, ah, yeah, it's okay. You know? So, they're wild looking. But anyway, let's see. What else? I was thinking... What's going to be your next project with carpets? Are you looking to get into anything new?
Carpet-wise, no, I don't think so. I want to, instead of filling cages with animals that I'm buying elsewhere, I want to fill cages with animals that I'm producing myself.
Okay.
And I'm at that point where I'm going to be producing animals that I have to hold back. Like, I'm going to be producing albinos and albino jags. So I'm going to want to hold them back, and that's cage bait. I'm going to be producing jag head granite. So I'm going to want to hold some of those back. That's more space I'm going to need. So right now I'm not looking to pick anything up carpet-wise, just because I don't have the space to dedicate to, you know, more adults when I know I'm going to have a few snakes that I have to get adult caging for.
Right. Yeah. That's what we were talking about earlier. It's kind of like, you know, I'm at that same crossroads, and I'm sure everybody comes to it. It's like, eventually you run out of room, and it's like, oh, man, what do I keep? What do
Give
I
your room.
Yeah, I have a,
I like
I have a male, I have a male IJ for my first clutch that I produced. It's the only one I held back, and I can't bring myself to sell that animal. It's a male.
Yep.
And he's taking up space, but he's the first, you know, it's one of the first ones I produced, and I can't get rid of him. So that's now a male I have, and I may never breed him, but I'm keeping him.
Cool.
Cool.
All right, cool. All right. Awesome.
Awesome. So, Chris, what do you, what's your take on the whole carpet market as it sits right now? I mean, do you think it's a good thing? You think we're gaining some popularity? Do you think it's too much popularity? What's your thoughts?
I think it's a good thing. I go, the only expo I really go to is the White Plains Expo.
Yes.
And I see more and more carpet people there. Since they've opened that second room, I see carpet people there that weren't there in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also see vendors who have the random carpet on their table. So I do see more. It's still dominated by ball pythons, but I see more and more carpets. I think it's good.
Okay. Now, well, where do you sit on the whole morph debate? You think that morphs are helping or hurting the market?
I think it helps. I think people who are getting into it are attracted by the morphs, you know, see a bright yellow jag or the albino. I think with more morphs coming out, people are going to want to get into it just because I feel like the hobby is driven by anything morph related.
That is true. I would have to agree with that. It kind of seems like if it's prettier than the normal version, I want it. So, but that's true with a lot of things, in my opinion. So, okay. Now, what other projects besides carp python are you working with?
I have a pair of Stimsons.
Okay.
And I have what started off as a group of viper geckos has dwindled down to two males who aren't breeding anytime soon.
No, because they're boys, and you can't do that. So
that was going to be a side project that I was going to do just for fun. They were geckos that I've always liked, but they've become hard to find. And
really?
The females that I had kind of just crashed out of nowhere.
Nice.
And I spoke to, when I picked up my Stimsons, I got them from Eric Kohler. And
okay.
He was keeping viper geckos. And he had told me that the females were known to just out of nowhere crash. And I guess the lines in the U.S. are so inbred that they don't do well to begin with.
Mm.
I guess they don't handle the inbreeding as well as other geckos do or other reptiles in general.
Mm.
So, and I've always wanted them, so I'm fine with having just two males. It pulls a lot.
Boys. Yeah. I've heard that with other species of gecko, like Europlatus, where all of a sudden it's happy and it's doing its thing, and then the next day its tail's dropped and it is dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of those things, but they're cool little geckos. So what brought the Stims in? Just kind of thought they were neat?
Yeah, I thought they were cool looking. I wanted to try something different, and I was looking for something that didn't take up much space, but something that was different, and the Stimsons were different. You know, I didn't want ball pythons that I could keep in a rack.
Right.
So I wanted to stick with the Australian theme, and I went with Stimsons. I still have some time before they're ready to breed. They're still pretty tiny.
Cool.
But I think they're cool looking. They're my favorite out of all the Antaresia.
Yeah, I had Spotteds, and they didn't do anything for me, so we got rid of them pretty quickly. But Chris had stems for a while, and they actually bred for him, and then we sold them for some reason. I don't remember why we did something stupid like that, but, you know, it was they're definitely cool little pythons.
I want the wheat belt. They're not here.
Ah, yeah.
Cool. They're like a morph without even being being a morph, you know. They're
but
like,
even all the morphs coming out of Australia, they see all the pictures of the children eye and all that other stuff going on over there. That's freaking wacky. They're like the ball python of Australia over there. We just lost like 18 listeners with that comment. I apologize.
I don't know, Owen. I don't know. They're cool. I like the pygmy pythons personally. I have a pair of children's pythons, but
you have everything except for chondros and ruskills. Sorry.
Jerk. Oh, thanks, Owen. You sent me some pictures of a bite wound.
Yeah, that was terrible. Jesus.
Something we never really hit on the show, but for one, I was curious on how it happened, and then we got sort of progression pics of how it, how you improved. So I'm curious of, A, what happened, and what did you do to treat the animal for it?
Okay, my first breeding season, I had my original pair of IJs, and I wanted to pick up one more female, and I picked up that GQ Hannibal IJ from Shad. He was selling that animal. It was, as an adult, I would be able to get it right into breeding. I could have a second animal go in that year. It was big. That was the only reason that I didn't bother double checking the sex. When I picked it up, it was probably 5.5-6 foot, over 2,000 grams. And, looking at what my male looked like, I just assumed, oh, it's a female. I'll trust them. And got it home, put it in with my male IJ, and there was no fighting, no combat, nothing. A couple weeks later, I saw a lock. I have pictures of it. I posted it before. So again, I assumed it was a breeding pair. I happened to go away for the weekend, and when I came home, there was my 600-gram male in the corner of the cage with two huge bite wounds in his side.
Ugh.
And that's when I realized that it was probably, well, at first I was still hoping maybe it was just an aggressive female. And when I had posted pictures of it on, I think it was the BLBC, I had posted pictures on it. Robin from Pro Exotics had commented that he had seen female carpets do that before.
Okay.
So I still thought that I was working with a pair.
Okay.
And I sent some pictures to one of the vets that I work with, and she told me to put Silvadine on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a antimicrobial medicine that they use on burn victims. So
yep.
I picked some up from her, and within 2 weeks, you could see the difference already. And that's why I sent the progression pics. You could see how it had healed. And the only thing I did, I didn't go get it stitched up. No bandages, nothing. I left it open. I just kept it in a sterile cage. On paper towels. I bumped up the temperatures a little bit. And within 2 weeks, the wound had started to heal. I was putting the Silvadine on it 2 or 3 times a day. Within 3 weeks, I already had him back in with a female breeding. Like nothing happened. He didn't seem to care. He went right to breeding my female.
Really?
And then within 2 months, it had fully closed. And now you could still see it a little bit. You could see where the scars are. And it looks like there's a small dent on that side, whether it's a damaged rib or You know, it's not a kink, but you could see where the bite was.
Right.
But completely fine, completely healed. No stitches. It closed on its own.
Wow.
Nice. We got mm-hmm. that. That's just scary. Wow.
I would say that something that I wanted to bring up, and I heard them talking about this on the first episode of Green Tree Keeper Radio. Is that what it's called? Green Tree Python Radio?
I think so, yeah.
I just listened to the first episode, and they had a veterinarian on, and they were talking about bringing your animal to the vet. And probably one of my biggest pet peeves online is seeing people post on forums or on a Facebook page, my animal is sick or my animal is vomiting blood. What do I do?
What do I do?
In the time that it took you to type that up and wait for a response, you could have taken it to a vet. So,
or called the vet at least.
Yeah, or called the vet. I keep in contact with vets on a regular basis just because I have friends who are vets and I work with vets. I don't agree with just getting medical advice for your animals from forums or using, you know, a medicine like Baytril or Fortaz or Amikacin, unless it's a vet telling you to use it or a vet, you know, prescribing it. You just seem to see people quickly turn to the antibiotics or, you know, the different medicines without even talking to a veterinarian. And they brought that up on the Green Tree show, and that seemed to be something that they agreed with also, or that the vet, you know, thought it was better to speak to a vet rather than just assuming an animal should take this type of medicine just because you've used it in the past.
Right.
You know, if you're going to invest in these animals, consult a vet when they get sick. Don't ask someone who, you know, they may be keeping animals for a long time, but in the end, they're not a vet. They're just going by, you know, well, my animal showed similar symptoms, so this is what I did.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, you know, I guess, like, sometimes I think maybe that my thought comes from the fact that some people don't have a reptile vet local to them. But I think that was a while, you know, in the past. Mm-hmm. But don't you agree now that there's more reptile vets around and they're more accessible than in the past?
Mm-hmm. I think they're more accessible, but also, in the end, that person has a DVM by their name for a reason.
Right.
And they may not be a reptile-specific vet, but
right.
they're still a vet, you know?
Right.
So
I just think about, like, you know, like, there's a – would you guys agree – would you agree that you get more – you have to gain some knowledge from keeping animals – than somebody that just reads a book about them. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, there has to be a point where...
Well, there are shortcuts
and
things you learn for husbandry, but that still doesn't defeat the purpose of, yeah, this guy read books and studied classes, but he's also a practicing vet. I mean, he's seen a lot of things, and he knows what works and what doesn't. Also, he's on the cutting edge of what drugs are new and what ones are working or what's out there.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but I mean, like, I think that you, for one, I'm not trying to disagree with you guys. I'm just saying that, you know, I think the mindset from where that came from was, it's kind of like, would you agree or disagree with the whole thing with people that kept reptiles in zoos? You know, zookeepers at one point were asking homekeepers about breeding certain species of reptiles. Am I wrong on that or right on that?
Well, it was from what would work. I mean, the zookeepers, it wasn't working what they were doing, so they asked people who kept them in the private sector to see what they were doing, and that may have worked. And, you know, I think the whole thing of not taking your animal to the vet comes from way back when some of the vets didn't really know what they were dealing with. So why bring it to this guy? He's not going to know. So
correct. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, now it is completely different. There are many learned vets out there. You may have to drive a little bit to get to your specific reptile vet. Like, I have my reptile vet, and then I have my vet for my dog. There are two different vets, two different things. The dog vet is really close to my house. The other one is a little bit further away, but it's worth it. I mean, you know, he's a vet for the Elmwood Park Zoo, so you hunt them down, you find them. So.
Do you think that by people just randomly giving their animals antibiotics, and, you know, they build up, like, the bacteria builds up a tolerance to that antibiotic, and do you think that, like, it becomes resistant, and do you think that over the years you're going to see more, like, well, if you would keep on that trajectory, would you see more animals with RIs and not being able to treat them? You know what I mean?
My vet was talking about that last year with me, because we brought in a possible RI. It turned out not to be, but he said that apparently some strains of Pseudomonas are becoming immune to Baitrill. And I'm like, you got to be shitting me, because that's pretty much a reptile person's bread and butter when it comes to certain type things for their animal. I mean, I've always had vets describe, you know, Baitrill or amikacin or whatever. So take that away, and, you know, we're all going to be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah. Do you get that experience from Chris? Do you work with the vet at the zoo? I know one of your friends is a vet too, right?
Yes. You met them at ICAS. Randon,
yes.
Dr. Feinsod, and his tech were both there.
Yes. But they also... keep reptiles as well, right?
Yes, they have a pretty good sized collection of reptiles.
Right.
But then I also do talk a lot to the vets that I work with, and another vet who works at the Staten Island Zoo, I'm pretty good friends with him, and he's looked at animals of mine also.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, and I just get my information about you know, I hear them talk about all the time, people who delay bringing their animals in, or they turn to the forums for advice before coming to a vet for help.
Jesus.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Like, you're talking to some keyboard cowboy that's probably 15 years old. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. You never know who's sitting on the other side of, you know, you never know who's answering.
Right.
Your question, you know, you could post about anything, and it could be anyone giving you advice, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and are they answering from experience, or are they answering because they read it in an article somewhere?
Yeah.
So.
Right, which would be the exact thing why you would not, like, the people that would argue not taking your animal to a vet would be the same reason why the same argument. You know what I mean? Like, they're arguing, oh, well, they don't work with reptiles or whatever, but meanwhile, the person you're talking to on the forum, you know, they don't work with them either. They're just telling you what they read out of a book. So
right.
I guess if I had to choose between the two, I'm taking the one with the letters after their name, you know.
Yeah, and the one with the letters comes with a prescription pad that you can sign stuff on. So, you know, whereas the other guy's like, you should get some amikacin. Do you have any? Nope. So, you know, it's like the other guy can at least go, well, I have no idea what this is, but let's run some tests. Holy crap, it's like pneumonia-ish. Let's get you this, and then we can shoot at it, and hopefully we'll do something. At least you have a better shot. You know, I would much rather go to – and I've been to vets that don't have any reptile experience just because it was an emergency, and they've come out of it doing very well, even if the vet is sitting there with a book – going through of like, well, all right, this is what it is. This is what, you know, they normally, this is what they subscribe for this, and this is what's going on. And they'll write out the prescription and get me going, and then I'll come back and see my vet when he's back in town. But it's still better than going to the forums and being like, crank the heat and give him some water. It's like, oh, excellent, that'll fix him. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So, you know, DVM is there for a reason.
Right.
And, Eric, I am still trying to get them to come on the show. I don't know if – I gave them your email. I don't know if they contacted you yet.
No.
But I am still trying to get them to come on.
Heck, yeah.
Excellent.
I'd love to talk to them.
Annoy them until they do.
Yeah. That'd be awesome because, you know, it would give the – you know, I think that it's really cool when shows have vets on because, you know, it gives that – you know, they come on and they're able to talk from their background and explain things in a whole different way. You know what I mean? And I think it's very educational, very eye-opening, at least for me. But, yeah, make that happen, man.
Cool.
So
I guess we're at the point where we can get to the really cool miscellaneous questions. Right, Eric?
Yes.
Excellent. So, Chris, if you could have any species, what would you have and why?
Okay, you're probably going to laugh and get a kick out of this one. But I used to keep dart frogs, and I lost my whole collection of dart frogs when I moved, and I'd like to get back into them.
I love it. I love Luca Millis.
Those are what I had. I had a group of six and a 40-gallon breeder, completely natural. Didn't have to – it's one of the easiest animals. Other than snakes, it was one of the easiest animals I ever took care of. I didn't have to clean anything because it all broke down. It was a bioactive substrate.
Excellent.
I raised all the fruit flies myself, so I always had food on hand. And
that's
they were
awesome.
Fun to watch.
They are. They are, and they're great. And when they get bigger and they call, it's hilarious. I mean, I want that to be like my coffee table in my house. It's just a tank full of freaking dart frogs. So, yeah, they're awesome. All right. What will your next big purchase be that is reptile-related? It doesn't have to be a snake, but something reptile-related.
Probably cages.
Excellent. Everyone
just
should get a bunch of cages.
I have a few animals that are outgrowing their tubs, and I just got an AP rack today, just arrived today, so I have to get that put together by the time my eggs hatch.
I was
at Walmart earlier, and I picked up a stack of 50 hatchling tubs, and you definitely get some looks from the cashier when you just pile all these tubs on the.
Did you buy the lids? Because I always get weird looks when I'm like, "Do you need lids?" No.
Yeah, I left all the lids on the shelf, and
exactly.
I was trying to explain to the cashier that I did not want the lids, and I couldn't believe what a big deal it was to this person that I wasn't taking the lids, that I was just taking.
Because they can't fathom what you're doing with them that doesn't involve the lids.
Yeah.
So, this is why this person can't get it.
It was pretty funny. I went and got – it's funny you say that. I went and bought 12 hatching tubs today, right? So I go in and the same thing. And they actually asked, they said, "Oh, man, that's a lot of tubs." I was like, "Yeah, my wife has a lot of shoes," because I didn't even want to go into –
Oh, you blamed your wife. You blamed your wife. You couldn't even tell them the reason.
No. The last time I went there, I explained them the reason. It was a whole big thing. And, you know, I just wanted to get the hell out of there. I didn't want to go into this big...
That's when I start handing out business cards. It's like, you know, "You don't need the list?" "No, I don't." Rogue business card right there, and then I walk away. So, yeah, done.
Oh, look at you, Owen.
Marketing, you're just letting it go out the door. Jesus.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's all right,
funny. Chris, would you be a reptile vendor or just a show attendee?
Well, I attend every single White Plains show. But I would like to vend at least once just to give it a try, just to see how it is.
Okay.
Even if I don't sell anything, I just want the experience of being out there and showing off my animals and talking to people. I have talked to Greg about maybe getting a table once he has diamonds. We've talked about it and talked about, you know, maybe getting a display and seeing what it's like to get a table at the expo at White Plains.
Cool. You get to let me know. I'll pop by. So, always good for a White Plains show. All right, next one, Chris. If you could travel anywhere without limitations, where would you go and why?
I'd like to go back to Costa Rica. I was there a couple of years ago, and we kind of stayed in one general area, so we didn't see as much as we could have. So I'd like to go back and do more traveling around Costa Rica, just to the different areas of Costa Rica, up in the mountains and then, you know, along the coast.
Cool.
There's so much out there to see, and, you know, we stayed in Arenal. So we were just in that small area.
Awesome. Did you do any herping while you were down there, or would that be something that would be the second trip?
Oh, no, we did. We went specifically to find snakes, and we found one snake, a speckled racer. Speckled race. That was the only snake we found the entire trip. We found plenty of frogs, turtles, caiman, but we didn't find any snakes. No tree vipers. We didn't find any of that.
No, yeah. That's kind of sucky. I would have liked to see some, like, you know, fleur de lance or something cool.
We may have stepped over them, never even knew they were there. But we
so that, see, that's the scary part. See, now you've ruined it for me. So, forgot that part. All right, Chris, so what is, in your opinion, the best species of Morelia and why?
I'm going to have to go with the carpets.
Okay.
I mean, it's the only ones I've kept. I've never kept any, you know, I'm not into the bigger snakes. I'm not into scrubs. So I'm going to have to go with the carpets just based on size. They're a good display animal. So I'm going to have to say the carpet.
Okay. So what would be your opinion, the better subspecies?
I like the IJs.
Okay.
No, nice. I just made Eric proud.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
You did. He's drafting up your Dark Side Army card right now. So
you're officially inducted.
Yeah.
Nice.
Damn it. So any particular reason for the IJs or just first love kind of a deal?
I like the earth tones. I like the size, you know, the smaller size. I'm not really into the bright, bright yellow and black jungles. I've never been a coastal person. I know that hurts you.
It does. That one hurts me. Yeah.
I've never really been into the coastals, but the IJs are definitely my favorite. It could just be because they're my first carpet too. And that's mostly what I have here.
Yeah, and I can kind of agree with you where it's like, you know, I love coastals. Well, why? What do you mean why? I love coastals. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I can explain it a little bit, but the rest is just because, dude, shut up. So
I like the Darwin too, but I think that's because they are very similar to IJs.
Yeah, I could see that. So, cool. Well, your army card will probably be in the mail once Eric sends it out.
Yes.
So. There's a whole care package now, apparently.
Yeah,
so.
You get a cookie.
I'm not supposed to talk about it. So.
How many IJs are you up to now?
Me?
Who? Me?
Three.
No. Eric.
Eric.
I have
two and a half.
Including my two granites, 31.
Jesus Christ.
That's more than I have in my entire collection of
snakes. Well, I can't say that, but, you know, that's more than my breeders, I think, but wow. Damn,
yeah,
you
now,
are running
now,
out of space.
Now you see why I have to make room, Owen.
I have to, yeah. Jesus Christ. Because I could do something crazy now and be like, well, maybe you should just cut back on the IJs.
There's a lot of selective breeding I want to do with them, you know. It's kind of like...
There was a play way of saying no, Owen, shut up. So
yeah.
You're not making room by selling one and buying three, though.
I know, man. I can't help it.
It's worse than that. It's like he's selling two and buying 12. It's like, that doesn't help you at all, dude.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what's the other crazy thing? It's like I get these carpets and get into these projects, and I'm like, I commit to them, like, and pay for them, like, years ago. And they're, like, just showing up now. You know what I mean? It's like,
yep, yep.
Wait a minute.
Oh, wow.
I totally forgot about that.
Oh, my God. That's coming? Weird.
Yeah. So, that's crazy. Yeah, I got, I have the same amount in coastals too. I got to trim down some of those as well.
Ooh, really?
There's a lot of snakes here. Yeah. Yeah.
You and I will talk, you know, make sure you call me first before you do anything.
Yeah. You know, you're always first on the list, though.
Goddamn right. The perks of being a freaking co-host.
That's right. So.
Did you know that every snake I look to buy somehow ends up in your house? when that poison ivy went up, when he was looking to sell that snake, I wanted it, and then it wasn't for sale anymore. And then not too long after, I see you post it up online. Look at this new snake I got. And I remember there was an IJ that I was looking at that I had seen for sale, and then you had it, and I think there was that stripe. At one point, I was looking at the striped jungles, and then it wasn't available anymore. And then you had it.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, shit.
Yep. Yep. Bought an entire clutch out from underneath, like, half the coastal people in the world here. So, you know.
That happened a lot. Well, you
if
know
you
what
want
I mean?
Something, buy it before Eric Burke does. That's the lesson of the whole episode. Right now is if you want a snake, buy it, because if you don't, Eric probably will.
Mm-hmm.
So. Hey, man, snooze, you lose. You know, I strike while the iron's hot, you know. If I want something, I'm going to try to my damnedest to get it. You know, but
jeez.
That's cool. Don't worry, I'll sell you some poison ivy babies.
Chris, I'll let you know when they hatch. Just come over and take one or two, and then we'll tell Eric.
Yeah. Tell him those eggs went bad.
Oh, yeah, those, they broke, dude. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know what the thing of it is I think they're going to hatch out. They're going to be normal looking.
Yeah.
And as they age, the black is going to come in. I really do think that's...
I kind of agree with you.
Oh, and what he's doing is making an excuse to hold on to the entire class.
I know, and
that's,
he's going to do that.
He's setting it up now.
He's like, I can't sell them. They're all going to turn black later.
You know how, you know what was funny? You know how, I think it was the very first episode we had Luke on, and we were talking about, you know, how when it was my first year breeding, and we were talking about, you know, how do you know which one to hold back and all this stuff. And I said, well, I'm just going to hold them all back. And you guys both laughed at me, right? So
yep.
You're like, you and Luke are like, you're crazy, man. You're not going to be able to hold them all back. What are you talking about? You're going to have to coat them out there and sell them and be done with it.
Well, the problem is that I'm thinking about with my clutches. You know, I can't hold back 42 babies from each clutch because that's ridiculous.
Right. But
10 babies isn't that bad.
I want to say this, though. That, you know, Zach, he followed my well, the what my approach, or he was having the same approach, or however you want to look at it. But his jungles sold like that because he didn't post them up when they looked like ugly bread, you know, like ugly
snakes. Exactly.
He waited
until they get their color and they sell. Yeah.
Boom.
Duh.
Done, you know? So, just saying.
Oh, I know.
You were going to say? What were you going to say, Chris?
I was thinking today when I picked up all those tubs at the store today, I was thinking how I could fit two or three clutches in one whole rack. And then I thought about how you need one whole rack just for a clutch.
Yeah, Eric dropped off his Poison Ivy clutch, and I had my Super Caramel clutch in the incubator. And he's like, oh, you got another clutch? I'm like, no, that's only one clutch. He's like, but there's two tubs. I'm like, yeah, I had to split them. Couldn't fit all in one tub. And he's like, Jesus Christ. So, and that's when I started joking with him. I'm like, so where's the other half of yours? So, yeah.
Owen does have the best baby rack, though, because what size tubs did you buy today, Chris?
Six quart, yeah.
Right, okay. So we're using 6 quart tubs. Owen uses something that's like half that size.
Yep.
And they're like perfect for like a baby carpet. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like, yeah, they're like half the size of it. It's not as tall or not as wide. I don't know. It's just smaller. So he gets more. He has more in that, like, you know, that like one little rack that you have than I think I have in two racks because of how he has.
Yes. Yeah, there's less height, but they work well. And I bought the whole rack used from Boa Master. They were selling it, and I had them deliver it to Hamburg, and it worked out quite freaking well. And it's been, I think all my babies were raised in that thing. So I think my first year I had them in tubs with lids, and that was horrible. And it didn't, like, I had built the rack, and it was a stupid idea, and I just went out and freaking bought one, and I actually have an emergency rack in my garage now, just in case I have to wheel it out for the amounts of babies. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I don't know, like, I don't know what I would do if, you know, I think about, like, breeding 20 clutches of carpets, and that's a lot of carpets. I'd be happy with five.
Five or six, I'm good. If I get 5 or 6 python clutches a year, I'll be good. But, you know, 70 clutches. I mean, I was doing the numbers this year, and I was close to, like, a couple hundred babies, and I just can't even imagine with 70 clutches.
Yeah.
You got to be close to 1,000 babies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you were doing it full-time, that's...
Yeah, if I had nothing else to do, but, you know, get clean cages and so.
Chris, do you think that you could breed carpet pythons full-time?
No, I don't think. I like going into my room. I usually take care of my stuff on like a Sunday or a Monday, and that's my day to just go into my room and, you know, spend. It doesn't even take me that long. It only takes me 1 or 2 hours to go through everything, and I can't imagine doing that all day long, every single day.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I guess for me personally, it's kind of my escape. I have it worked out to where I'm doing like a rack a day. You know what I mean? I guess I could cram it and do it all in one shot. But I find that I pay more attention to the animals that are in that rack. You know, like it gives me more time with them, I guess, if that's a better way to say it, you know? It's quality time.
I also clean shit 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So and a grizzly bear turd is bigger than a snake turd. So, you know, I kind of feel scared for him there.
Yo, man, that's the one animal that scares the shit out of me, man. Grizzly bears. Good Lord.
Yeah, it should. I mean, he could kill you without even thinking about it. I mean, you come up like, what, his hip? So.
Yeah.
Oh. You don't ever, like, get are you ever, like, nervous or whatever going to work? Like, oh, shit, I got to work with this big grizzly bear today.
No.
He doesn't walk into the pen with a chair and a whip, dude. I mean, it's a little different nowadays.
I guess so. I don't know. What do I know? But it's just crazy. I'm not from the zoo world like used to.
I did see an old picture of you from the zoo, Owen, wearing your...
No, we didn't. There was nothing... No, shut the fuck up. No, there wasn't. There was nothing on any kind of thing that needed to be talked about.
Yeah. You brought that up.
I am glad that is not my uniform.
That was only for when I had to do educational programs, and I wanted to die every time I put it on. So...
Hi, my name is Owen McIntyre, a.k.a.
Fuck you,
Ranger
shut up.
Rick.
Shut up. That was not...
I know what I look like.
I know what I look like. It was terrible. But, you know, when you graduate college, you apparently need paychecks to live, so...
What was that gig?
Yep.
What did you
that
do?
Was...
Go talk to kids?
Yeah, go talk to kids at schools. We had a whole animal program we did at certain schools. And for a while, the director was like, you guys should wear these fucking hats. And I'm like, that's no. And I got yelled at a bunch of times about not wearing the hat, so I had to wear it once. And, of course, I did. And that's when a bunch of pictures were taken that I subsequently had to hunt down and destroy. And apparently that's one that I missed. So, yeah. The hats were destroyed shortly afterwards, maliciously, accidentally. So, no more.
That's awesome. That's great.
No okay, more. No, we don't need to see that picture again. Shut up.
I want that on, like, a poster or a T-shirt or something. Like.
Don't give that idea to the people out there, because somebody is going to be crazy enough to do that.
Where's B-Hop when you need
him? No, you leave that man out of this right now.
Awesome.
God, no, thank God he didn't see that.
I might have to send him a link.
Shut up.
Yeah, we can let him know.
No, there's no need to do these things. Balin already threatened to do something like send that to B-Hop or whatever, you know. I don't need enemies with friends like you guys.
That's right.
That would make a big, a good cardboard cutout of you.
Oh, my God.
I should get it made. Him and Howard.
Got it. No, you wouldn't spend the money. So.
I think I would.
No, you wouldn't.
Oh, Owen's not going to come to me. He's not going to come to Tinley Park this year. Oh, let's just
No. No, see, that's one thing I'm concerned about, is I'm going to be like, I can't make it to Tinley, and then this picture is just going to somehow run rampant, and I ain't killing me for that one.
Poor Owen, last time is, what do you call it, they were burning his business cards.
Yeah, they were burning my business cards. They were like, gas to keep warm somehow. I'm like, bullshit, you're just doing it because you're all pyromaniacs, and Jason's like, that might be true, so.
Good times to be had. Okay, so yeah, we're almost out of time. So how do we get in touch with you, Chris? What's your are you a website guy, a Facebook page guy, email?
No, I don't have a website. I don't have a Facebook page dedicated to my animals. I should work on that.
That's pretty freaking simple, man. I mean, at least
I know. I post my animals up on the, you know, Morelia Pick of the Week and the classified group on Facebook. It's just my name, Chris Salemi, Salemi. And in case you were wondering, Owen, I threatened to hang up on Eric if he said it wrong. And when we were talking last week, he actually spelled my name out phonetically like you would see in a dictionary to get the pronunciation right.
Excellent. Yeah.
You want me to tell you why I said your name wrong? Because when I first started working in the supermarket business, I worked in the deli department. So whenever I see a word, whenever I see that word like that, I automatically see salami. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it doesn't matter what it says. It's what I saw. I'm just like, oh,
but
yeah, that's
said,
a salami.
You said it probably three other different ways also.
Yeah, I know. Because then I, you know what happened then? I was like, oh, shit, I think I said that wrong. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. And, of course, you know, Owen, he didn't bail me out. He just let me drown.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I ain't throwing you life preservers.
Yeah. Son of a bitch.
Yep.
But
I'll let you rot.
But I got it. So there you
yep.
go.
And then my email is csalemi731@gmail.com.
Awesome.
And
cool.
That's how you can get in touch with me. I'm pretty easy to get in touch with on Facebook. That's probably the best way.
Okay. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on, and it was good talking
yep,
with
it's
you.
Great.
Glad you finally took the plunge. So,
yep.
You know. Awesome
so,
stuff.
Once I have animals out, maybe I'll come back on. I should have a couple clutches available in a couple months.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. Please do.
Yeah.
We can't just be left to our own devices. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's keep us posted.
Sweet.
All right, Chris.
All right.
Thanks a lot, man.
Have a good one.
See you later. Bye.
All right. Cool deal. All right,
mm-hmm.
So let's see. Let's go through some orders of business, and we shall exit stage left.
Stage
the,
left.
next week, we're going to be talking about setting up a reptile business, you know, setting up an LLC, all that kind of stuff.
Whether it's going to be like the it's going to be whether if it's a good idea for you to set up when is a good time for you to set up a reptile business? You know, just because you have two corn snakes and they made babies doesn't necessarily mean you need to do all the fun things you got to do to set up a reptile business. As well as we'll talk about if an LLC is a good idea for you guys. There are a lot of things that you need to do to set up an LLC as well as keep an LLC active. And there are taxes that you have to pay. The other thing is we're also going to tell you guys where to go to get the permits to make sure that everything you do is legal. I know in Pennsylvania I had to grab a couple permits to do my stuff. And I also know that I had to send a few links to some of the other carp breeders that do shows in Pennsylvania to make sure that they kept stuff legal. So it's definitely know where to go because a lot of that stuff is going to be hidden. They kind of put those in
yeah.
obscure places on the websites because they don't want you to do it. So, but hopefully we'll be able to tell you where to go and where to get it and how to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's... You know, the only upside to that is that if you're actually paying taxes and you're a legit business, I think that these, you know, Congress and all that, they're gonna look at us a whole different way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to know if it's the right thing for you to do or not. You know, just like you were just saying, is this really what I should do? But you know, if you're breeding snakes on a somewhat large scale, definitely should be set up that way. So
yep.
We're going to talk all about it. So should be a cool show from a different perspective about the reptile business. So let me just run down the list here real quick, and we'll get out of here. So Morelia Python Forum, we're sponsored by Morelia Python Forum, www.moreliapythons.com, the best Morelia Forum on the web. Don't forget about Carpet Fest. The Northeast is on May 17th.
Northeast Carpet Fest.
Right. Northeast Waldorf, Maryland, hosted by Howard Redding of Redding Reptile Breeders. For news and updates, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Carpet Fest. And the website, like I said, is www.homestead.carpetfest.org. And we're looking for donations for the auction, and the proceeds
mm-hmm.
go to U.S. ARC and Rico Walder. So make sure that you get in touch with one of us about actually get in touch with me You can either email me at info@moreliapythonradio.com or you can message me on Facebook because that's what I'm in charge of. So,
and if you're going to come, make sure that you post up on Carpet Fest, on the Carpet Fest Facebook page, or shoot me an email on Facebook about what food you are going to bring to Carpet Fest, and we'll get you marked down for that as well. Also, you can go on to the booster site, which the links are pinned up on the Morelia Pick of the Week and Morelia Python Radio, to go get your Carpet Fest t-shirt if you are attending Carpet Fest.
Correct. Yep, and don't forget the Northwest Carpet Fest is July 25th, and that is in Seattle, Washington. So as that date gets closer, we'll get more info on that. And that's also over at the website. Morelia Python Radio, again, same thing. You can follow us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter at Morelia Python Radio. Check out the website, moreliapythonradio.com. I actually just updated it and changed the classification for the genus for scrub pythons.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And Boland's python and
Olin Pelly.
Yeah, so kind of hurt me a little bit. But, yeah, it's all updated on there. I'm going to leave it on there because – I don't know. They're always being Morelia to me. So,
right.
And so, plus I did a lot of work for that. So, we're going to leave it there. If you miss the show live, you can always download us on iTunes for free. So you can go over there and listen that way. If you have questions or comments, you can email us at info@moreliapythonradio.com. And for me personally, for all my stuff that I have going on, check out ebmorelia.com, or you can follow me on Facebook page, EB Morelia, and for all the updates as far as what I have going on. Some pretty cool things coming up. Hopefully we're going to see some albino zebras and albino zebra jags, some sun glows and some sun glow jags, and some, what's the other thing? Oh, yeah, tigers had albino, so. Some cool
nice.
Stuff, for sure. So just go over and give the Facebook page a like, and make sure you check on the website from now and then. That's all I got, Owen. It's all you. All
right. What we got is you can go to rogue-reptiles.com for all the happenings at Rogue. You can get all the updates as well as bios on all our breeders and all our other animals. We are in the process of updating it, adding pictures to our Savu pythons as well as our rough scale python page. So that'll be up soon. You can also go and find Rogue Reptiles at Facebook.com. If you do like Rogue Reptiles, any babies that we put up for sale will go on the Rogue Facebook page a week before hitting the general public. So it's kind of like a perk that we give you guys first look and first refusal before we send it off to the general public. We are almost out of babies. The 2013 babies are almost gone. I think we are down to like 9, maybe.
Nice.
And that's it. So if you want to get on the list for anything from the 2014 clutches that are coming, let me know. We'll be happy to put you on a list. That does not guarantee you a baby, but it does get you started. And definitely check that out. We'll let everybody know when stuff starts hatching and eggs start laying. So that's pretty much all I got. The next reptile show we will be attending, I believe, is the April 26th Hamburg Reptile Show in Hamburg, Pennsylvania. So come check us out there. That's all I got, and that's all we got. So what we'll say is good night, and we will check everybody out next week for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night.
Who are you to wave your finger? You must have been out your hair. I hold deep in muddy waters. You practically